It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast as we're recording this, having a great time with Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
What's going on, dude?
You sound really happy right now.
I'm thrilled.
Excited.
Yeah.
You sound so excited. Man, with your energy level, man, we're going to have to hold you. We'll have to pull you back in. That's a typical Kyle from LaGrange, so we're used to it. Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, man?
Good evening, guys.
Well, you sound excited, too. What, am I the only...
Yeah, I know. I'm always just exploding with energy.
Yeah, you're a spitfire, Bubba, what you are.
Woo, man, yes, he is. Gosh.
We all don't have that Zaxby Salad energy that you have right now.
I know, I do. I know. I guess we can start off the podcast. I was talking about the places that are way expensive, and that's probably one of the most high-dollar fast food places.
Overpriced, overpriced for what you get.
It's about $2 or $3 more than it should be.
Yes, it's like the concessions at the East Carolina football games.
Well, hey, by the way, they're going to – we'll see. We'll find out if they will. We'll talk to John Gilbert, a very special guest. We'll find out about.
Yeah,
more.
We need to let people know tonight on the podcast. East Carolina Athletic Director John Gilbert will join us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. So you've opened up the podcast. You've tuned in on a very good episode. We've got John Gilbert, the AD at East Carolina.
I thought you were getting ready to go into a Dusty Rhodes, baby.
Yeah, well,
that's what I thought.
Let me tell you something, David Richmond, baby. I have dined with kings and queens, but I've also slept down as a talking bean.
Yeah.
So. And Ole Anderson, it'll never be over. I don't know where this is going.
Okay,
but.
No, that's well. Anyway, so Zaxby's overpriced. Are there any other
places? Zaxby's is overpriced for their little chicken fingers. They want to sell you chicken fingers like it's filet mignon, baby. But it's just little chicken fingers.
More like pork and
beans. Just like you, Ole Anderson, with your little chicken fingers on your hand.
But you're the son of a plumber.
Son of a plumber, that's right, baby.
So we're going to talk about.
Zaxby's is overpriced for this. So is Arby's. Arby's, you can get some good deals. And they do have the meats for sandwiches, but they're overpriced for what they are without the deals also. Zaxby's, Arby's, Highway 55, another place is extremely overpriced for what it is.
Five Guys.
Five Guys is overpriced, but to me, their quality is so far beyond those other places that I'll let them slow. I don't look at Five Guys as fast food.
You don't?
I look at it
guys.
As fast
I got one for you. Have you ever been? Have either of you been to a Freddy's Steak Burgers?
No,
I've not.
If you, they have one down in Concord near Concord Mills Mall. When you go to one, or don't make the mistake of going one, I should say. So that's what. A few months ago, Stacy and I and my parents went to one, and I thought it would probably be pretty good. It was not only overpriced, but the burgers and the food wasn't particularly good either. So,
yeah, and that is with Zaxby's and Arby's, Highway 55, and particularly Five Guys. At least the food's good. Now I've never been to this chain, and. Again, I think this falls into that Five Guys. Is it fast food? Is it casual dining? I've never been to one. Maybe one of you guys have. But I've heard Johnny Rockets is very overpriced.
It is. I've been to.
Now, would you consider that fast food, Dave, or is it more casual dining?
I would say lean more towards casual dining. They had one when I was living in Elizabeth City. We went to the Norfolk and down in the – their mall down there, and I remember there was a Johnny Rockets, and it wasn't like really, really overpriced, but I can. It was definitely
right,
not like a good value.
Yeah, and then while we're on that overpriced and maybe fast food places that you don't see everywhere, a place that I do think you can get pretty good deals at, and you can pay more for food there. But overall, I think they're reasonably priced. Is a Steak and Shake.
I love that.
Yeah, they were supposed to be franchising a couple in the Jacksonville area, and somehow it fell through. I'm not sure why, but those were going to be the first in Eastern North Carolina, and I don't know what happened. But the nearest Steak and Shake, I believe there are a couple in the Raleigh area.
That's correct. So, there's one on Capitol Boulevard, I know.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a place while we're on the topic of fast food. When you guys go to Boone, it's called the Comeback Shack.
Oh, yeah. Never, but I know about it.
But there's at least a couple of them. I'm trying to remember where the other location or two are.
I believe Charleston.
I believe you're right. Comeback Shack is tremendous.
I've never heard that.
I've heard that mentioned. Never eaten there, but yeah, that's a place I definitely want to try. I'll tell you another place, and I love this place, but they are overpriced, but I still endorse them highly, and that's Mellow Mushrooms. Highly endorse them, but they're overpriced.
Yeah, they're a good butcher, yeah. That's somewhere you can't go every day. Well, not every day, but
it is. I mean, you know, a large pizza there costs like $25, and unless you just get like a pepperoni. But, you know, if you want one with several sauce, it's like $25. And that's a lot for a large pizza, but it is very good.
Yeah, like our podcast, so.
Your podcast is free, baby.
That's right. It's free, baby.
Worth every penny. I mean, it's worth every penny you pay
for. That's right, yeah. Speaking of good values, we're not overpriced.
We are the Dollar Tree of
but
podcasts.
But I tell you what's going to be overpriced is, I don't know if you guys saw today. I think you did. Bubba did, I know, that NC State, the trustees, approved for the August 31st game against East Carolina. Then they're going to have to drink a lot because we're going to beat them, right? No, I'm just kidding. But they approved where they can have alcohol sales at the August 31st game and all the NC State games this year.
Yeah, and you'll hear later on to tease our interview with John Gilbert. We're going to be voting on that very soon with Arch Chancellor and Board of Trustees. I think it's inevitable.
It's a done deal. It's a done deal.
It's inevitable. State's going to do it. Obviously,
everybody's
going to
do it.
We're going to do it. Why wouldn't you? And it'll be interesting to see. Again, I don't want to give away too much of the interview, but how is it going to be implemented? Is it going to be everywhere in the stadium? You're going to be able to have your.
I think it'll be select places. That's my guess.
Yeah, you know, I would do it the other way around, Dave. I would do everywhere in the stadium, and then have a family friendly zone.
Okay, yeah.
That's how I would do it. Where if you didn't want to be around it, you know, I wouldn't think. You know, I wondered if they were gonna. I thought, well, maybe they'll ban it from the student section, but I think that'd be a huge mistake in terms of money. Because here's the thing: people are talking are going to worry about safety, and I understand that. But really, it's much to do about nothing because people go to the parking lot. People, if you're worried about that, I mean, good God, people are drunk off their ass before they come to the stadium. People will stay in the parking lot and drink. People will leave the game early to go back out and start drinking. People are going to drink if they want to drink. They're going to drink.
Exactly.
You're going to have a handful of people like me who don't tailgate before the games. I don't drink before the games, but if we're blowing somebody out and I'm having fun, you know, I'll probably drink a couple beers in the stadium, whereas normally I wouldn't. But I'll be the exception of someone that will drink at the game that normally wouldn't drink otherwise.
Kyle, I have one for you. Last year against North Carolina A&T, how many beers do you think you would have taken in?
No, none. After the game, I could have polished off a fifth if I had a, you know, a bottle of Jack Daniels or something. If I never have to think about that North Carolina A&T game again, it'd be insane. Ridiculous, utterly ridiculous that we lost.
Better bring me my money.
Yeah. Well. I kind of wish, part of me wishes that instead of William and Mary, we were doing a rematch with A&T. I really do. Just to payback.
That'll be
but
great.
Nothing against them. Look, A&T won fair and square in terms of them. There's no need to be angry at A&T about it.
No.
It was a moronic head coach that had a stupid game plan to hide crap for UNC, and had you know, we would have won. Well, if we'd have finished our drives, we'd have won that game. But had he went ahead and played, had he went ahead and played Ehlers and did some other things, we would have won also. But anyway, there's no need to look back on the Montgomery era.
No, it's done.
Yeah. Now, guys, taking a look at that August 31st game against NC State, and in terms of beer and wine sales, though, it will be very interesting to see that day I think it's like a 12:10 or something, some odd time, 12:10 or 12:15 kick, I believe. But
yeah,
whatever, whatever. A noon kickoff, and not as much tailgate time. So it would be interesting to see what the money that's brought in at the concession stands in terms of beer and wine is that day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know with wine sales, does that include champagne? 12 o'clock kick. If I'm NC State, when I open the stadium at 11 o'clock, if champagne's included, I'm selling mimosas, baby.
That sounds good. Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see about for us. We'll talk to John Gilbert.
Yeah, you know, he said Aramark would be, you know, they're our concession provider. That'd be through them. You know, I'd be interested to see if we involve some local breweries, like, you know, what are a couple of the ones in Greenville?
It's, you know, the one with Billy Beer.
Yeah. Well, isn't there like a Pitt Street Brewing? Or I don't know.
I think
Pitt
I would
Street,
like to see.
Pitt Street Brewing.
I'd like to see, for me personally, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'd like to see some brewery stuff and maybe you could have like they have for baseball games for like a beer garden area where you have like different local breweries in addition to the
But then to like, you know, Budweiser. I'd love to see like, you know, Mother Earth in Kinston, Duplin Winery, you know, you get them involved. Then,
yeah.
You know, at some locations now they're doing Duplin Winery slushies. Those probably sell like gangbusters.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. Especially the first, that one, the very first Gardner Webb game. It'll be a million degrees.
Well, it's going to be a night game, so it won't be so bad.
Well, that's right. It won't be as bad because it won't be like the noon kickoff like several years ago with App State. But I'm excited about it. I think that, again, my only concern is not because of the alcohol sales, is that some people, I think, have overestimated how much money. It'll bring them money. I'm happy about that. Don't get me wrong.
Well, what people do you think have overestimated it, Dave? What is your concern there with the over? Are you talking about fans or administration?
No, not administration. I think they're more realistic. I think some fans, it's not all fans, so it's always not worth mentioning.
What am I trying to say here? If they have high expectations that it's going to bring in a lot of revenue and it doesn't meet their expectations, tell them to buy more beer next year. It kind of is what it is. It's more revenue. I mean, anytime you can generate more revenue, even if it's just a couple $1,000 more revenue, it's a good thing.
I don't have a problem with it. I think there are some people, I don't know what the percentage is, but there's some people that were against, you know, alcohol sales. But the way I look at it is what you were saying earlier, the fact that there are people drinking in the parking lot, and they're very, I would say, in the town gown relations department, they are very lenient on the alcohol being consumed in the parking lot compared to what they normally would be because of that's part of the tradition of tailgating and people having a good time. And it's okay for me as long as people are responsible. I know people, that sounds like a public service announcement, but that's the problem I have is a lot of people binge drink. They drink way too much. For me and Kyle, I don't know about Bubba, but I know for the two of us, for me, I'm there to watch the game, and everybody's different, but it's kind of like a great concert. You're going to go there for the music. You're going to go for there for the entertainment.
Yeah, you know, that irritates the hell out of me, Dave. When I'm at a concert, and I drink. Believe me, people, don't think they're wrong. I drink, and And if any of you ever want to get together and drink, I can drink. I just want to make that clear. But, like, when I go to a concert, nothing irritates the hell out of me more than when I'm sitting in my seat and I have to get up every 5 minutes so the same five assholes can keep going and getting beer or mixed drinks and coming over and over, over, stand up. Sit
There's
up, stand
always
up, sit
two
down.
Or three, yeah.
Yeah, over and over, and I'm like, "What? You should have just went to a club."
What was that?
Sounds like that to me. Sounds like a motorcycle.
yeah, it's the sounds of Rowan County, y'all.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Kyle making some noise. Like,
no,
some bad
gas.
But you
pay $50 to $100 for good concert seats. And the whole time you're up, down, drink. You miss half the damn concert. Yeah, it never registers in my brain why people do that. I mean, just go to a club. You just go to a club if you want to drink. Stay home. Look, you know, I've been to, in the last year, I've been to, I don't know, 6-7 concerts. I drank at one of them. I drank 2 7-and-7s. At one concert this year. That's the only time I drank at any concert because it's too damn expensive to drink at concerts. And why are you going to spend so much money for something and just spend the whole time going back and forth? It's nothing to do with having a problem with people getting drunk or drinking. It's just I don't understand it. But if you're on the lawn, you know, at Walnut Creek, for example, those tickets are cheap. Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Anyway, that was kind of off on a tangent, but let's get back on track.
Yeah, let's do. Do you guys want to go ahead and go to John Gilbert?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea at this point.
Yeah, let's do. We had a great time earlier today sitting down with the director of athletics from East Carolina, and let's go to the interview with John Gilbert right now. Well, guys, it's the summertime, and one of the guys we're very happy with is the head of East Carolina Athletics, Bubba. Guys, been doing a great job.
Absolutely. I'm very excited now with football season quickly approaching to catch up with East Carolina Director of Athletics, John Gilbert. John, welcome into the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We appreciate you very much, and I can speak for many in Pirate Nation. We appreciate you, and I was just talking to Philip Wood earlier today, by the way, John, and I told everybody the reason why I love you so much is that you drive a pickup truck.
Well, I love the pickup truck. I think it's the most practical vehicle, and I've got a great dealer in Will Wilkinson there in Sanford. So I'm fitting in Eastern North Carolina well.
No, John, it's funny. Before we go into anything else, we actually talked to an East Carolina baseball alum, Chad Triplett, back in the spring, and when we did, and he's part of that dealership, and he was talking about providing. He said we actually provide Mr. Gilbert with his car.
Yeah, they've been really generous with that truck.
Wanted to ask first of all, we saw yesterday the and we have to commend you once again on the transparency. I know you and Ryan have been working really hard on. The From the Helm, those have been outstanding. Did you want to talk about some of the highlights that the letter, in case people haven't had a chance to see that on ecpirates.com?
Well, I think, one, it's important to communicate with our fan base. I do get criticized from time to time that I'm not on social media. And so I do think the letters, and then we also do a segment. We should have one with Holt Naylor's coming out here either today or the next day or two, the 60 seconds with the AD. And I think it is a way for the Pirate Nation to get to know me and hear from me. Obviously, I'm at not every one of our athletic events, but certainly I'm at a majority of them. So the people that come to our events get to see and touch me on a frequent basis. But it really is, you know, fan engagement has been an important component for us. And so I think those things are really important. Obviously, football ticket sales, we have surpassed where we were last year already with, you know, another month to go. So I'm encouraged about where that is. we announced a fan engagement, another fan engagement segment where we're going to have a kid zone inside Dowdy Ficklin. So those kids that come to the game and they want to go over into this area of Dowdy Ficklin, we'll certainly be able to do so. So a lot of exciting things are headed this way.
John, this is Kyle. Where are we at right now with the recent bill being passed to allow beer and wine sales at college football camp or at college campuses? Where are we at on that in preparation? Are we going to be ready to sell alcohol at Dowdy Ficklin start of the year?
Well, it's a great question, and we actually have a Board of Trustee meeting this week, and so really the Chancellor and the Board of Trustees will make that final decision. If they approve that measure, certainly we will be prepared. That is something that we would work with our concessions partner in. In this case, our partner is Aramark, and so we would be working with Aramark on how that is distributed, and certainly to a larger degree. The number one thing that we would look at with regard to this, it's an amenity that would help, with the game day atmosphere for those individuals that choose to do so. And so we'd want to do that in a very responsible manner. So there will be a lot of people that would be engaged in that decision-making process, and then more importantly, how we do it on game day. Certainly our police department, our student affairs office, athletics, Aramark concessions, we would all play a role in how that's done on game day.
And with a lot of the professional events I've been to, John, in the past, they have, like, for example, trying the safety piece of things where you wouldn't sell alcohol after the third quarter or different things like that, I assume.
Absolutely. We would look at all the measures that you normally would see at a venue that does this. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves and get into any specifics until the Chancellor and the board, make their final decision.
John, also wanted to
go ahead, Coach.
Dave, do you have a follow-up to that?
No, go ahead. You're fine.
John, I wanted to ask you, my time's limited here. I have to get back to my other job here in a few minutes. But I wanted to, if you could, if there's anything you could touch on with future schedules. I know recently moving the Georgia State game to fill the spot that Virginia Tech left on our schedule. And I know the schedule is filled out pretty much down the road, but there are a couple of openings. Are we looking at scheduling some regional opponents, like ACC-type opponents, or would you be interested in stepping outside the region at some Power 5 or upper echelon group of five teams, maybe outside the region?
Well, in short, on football scheduling, I would tell you my preference would be to play regional teams. The Georgia State game actually really did benefit us. We were scheduled to play them, and don't hold me to this, but I think it was like 23-28. 23 in Atlanta, 28 in Greenville. We needed a game in 20. It worked out where Georgia State was willing to move the game up from 23 to 20. So that completed our 20 football schedule, non-conference football schedule. We are open. That gave us another opening in 23. We'll look to add, where it makes sense, a guarantee game or two. And so in 23, I will be looking at, is there a game out there that makes sense from a financial standpoint? And I also want to look at home and homes. I think it's important, to get as many good teams that can come to Greenville and add value competitively and games that our fan base would like to see. Obviously, we have NC State home and home in coming years. We've got Wake Forest in coming years. We've got a return game of West Virginia coming up. We've got Boise home and home in future years. And so where we can add to bring value to that, but also look at a guarantee game here and there, we will be doing that.
John, I'm going to ask a man on the street question really fast. One of the things, I know you probably don't pay attention to message boards, but the fans, I know the fan base in Pirate Nation, I can feel safe, and the guys on this podcast too, are concerned about one issue, and that is one of the games we got bowled out was the South Carolina game for this year, for this
right.
season. We're worried about the 21. I think they return in 21 or in a couple years.
That's correct. We go there in 20, and they come back in 21. I've had multiple conversations with administration at South Carolina. I do not get the sense that that will happen. At least I've got no indication at this point in time, so I'm not as concerned about that today.
Okay.
When you say that'll happen, you mean you don't believe they're going to want to buy out the game in 21?
No, my every indication that I've heard is that they will plan on being here in 2021.
Okay, I hope so. They've been planning on coming here for a while, and they hadn't done it yet, so it'd be nice.
It's been, I think, since the 90s, right?
Yes, it's been a while. Maybe 97, I believe. I had one other question, John. What do you guys go ahead? Because I'm just right there for a second.
John, one of the things I wanted to really talk to you about on yesterday's From the Helm was largely the first half of it was focused on alignment. You used that word several times, alignment, as far as Pirate Nation all rowing the boat in the same direction, so to speak. And you've already referenced some of the things that you've done to really establish a rapport between yourselves and the administration and the fan base, what have you. You've also had other things coming down the line, such as the Meet the Pirates event on August 17th. Also, something new this year that I think will be very cool after ball games, you're going to open up Bagwell Field. I'm assuming that will, of course, have to be once the teams have been safely cleared from the field and into the locker room. So talk a little bit about that and how that will work.
Well, one of the pillars that I talked about when I first accepted the job was alignment. And I do believe in order for this institution, for this fan base, and for our athletic department to move forward, we have to all be in alignment with one another. And so I think it is important that we have great relationships on campus. I've said multiple times, athletics is not the most important thing on campus, but we are the most visible. And so I do want to make sure that we are aligned with campus. Campus has been extremely supportive of athletics since I've been here. Certainly Vice Chancellor Gerlach, the other vice chancellors that oversee all the other operating units on campus have been very engaged and very supportive of athletics. And that's reciprocal. We support them. They support us. We both benefit when the other is successful. And then we need to be aligned with our fan base. I want to make sure that we are communicating with them. They are feeling engaged. We want to make sure that we have a great fan experience for them, hence the getting to go on the field post-game, a kid zone. We're working on a few other things from a fan hospitality engagement standpoint that once we round third and headed for home, we'll be able to announce those as well. But I do think alignment's really important. We all need to be on the same page. Every pirate matters if we're going to get this ship turned and headed in the right direction.
John, you talk about alignment. I wanted to ask one quick question about realignment. Do you have a personal opinion or a feeling on the American with Connecticut leaving? Should we add? Should we stay at 11? What do you feel personally?
Well, my sense is that we'll probably be at 11 in the short term. I don't see us adding quickly. I do think if it is an institution that we add, that they are bringing value to us.
Right.
And certainly when you talk about that, you're talking about, the first thing I want to point out is those decisions are made by presidents. You know, when you talk about realignment, it's not coaches and ADs sitting in a room and saying, hey, let's bring school X over to be a part of it. Those decisions are really made by the commissioner and the president. And so when you talk about, you know, looking at specific schools, I would tell you, you've got to look comprehensively. How is the institution academically? How is the institution financially? How is the institution committed to athletics? What market are they in? What competitive success do they have? You know, are they a top-tier research institution? There are a lot of factors that would play into adding a member, and so I do have the sense that our league will, you know, take time and move in a very strategic direction.
I wanted to ask, as far as one of the, certainly the elephants in the room, if you will, is the indoor practice facility. I know that, first of all, thank you for all the stuff we're hearing about, the improvements and facilities. I know that you talked about that the first time you were on the podcast with us several months ago. Can you talk about, Coach Houston has talked about next year being, I know he recently said about maybe getting the ball rolling for the indoor practice facility. I know you can't talk about a timeline, but are we anywhere closer to getting the ball rolling?
Well, I would tell you an indoor football building is really important. I do think that as you look across the landscape of Division I football, you know, where we want our program to be, I do think it will be important for us to cross that threshold and have an indoor building. It is something that we will have to fundraise for. And so when you, depending on the bells and whistles, you're talking about $20 to $25 million. And, you know, that's something you can't do $100 at a time. You need people that are making, you know, large, significant gifts that would consider putting their name on the building. And so we obviously are, you know, have that as, you know, one of our top priorities. I don't want to put a timeline on it. I do want to work in conjunction with campus and others about how we move that project forward.
I wanted to ask along those lines to follow up really quick on the indoor practice facility. I know that Kyle and Bubba and I have talked about, is there any way possible, like other schools, where you have an indoor practice facility and adjacent to it you can have a really nice football office with a lot of amenities for recruits coming in or even the players?
I'm going to answer that question by saying we can do anything with money.
Okay.
And John, kind of along those same lines regarding the indoor practice facility, something I was curious because this would be ideal from a location perspective, but is the area there adjacent to Ward and the Cliffmore practice facility where the tennis courts currently are, is that a location that could potentially be used for that down the road?
I would say this, as we, you know, as we explore an indoor building, we would want to keep it in our contiguous footprint. So I would say, you know, undetermined at this time, but I would say everything's on the table from a location standpoint.
And along those lines, I wanted to ask you something that's very important to me. I mentioned to Philip as well. Is there any way, because we know how much you were talking about money, our friends in Chapel Hill, they have a very, ambitious campaign going on for their athletics. I think it's like $100 million. Is that something that we could do where we could say, okay, guys, we need X amount of money and we need to raise it over a hand? Obviously, it wouldn't be overnight, a year. It'll be over a handful of years. Is that something we can do at East Carolina?
Absolutely, we can. And actually, we are working on a document that will outline what our needs are for all our sports programs and some big projects that, you know, we need to fund. It essentially would be a menu of items that people could donate to. We are working on that document, and I hope to have that ready where all Pirate Nation will be able to look at the document and invest at whatever level they're comfortable with by early fall.
I know one of the things I'm really proud, John, is not only having you, but when you look at I was telling the fellas, and I'm really sincere when I say this, not even last year, we couldn't say that all three sports with the coaches. Now we have Coach Dooley, of course, what a great job with baseball with Cliff Godwin. and with Coach Mike Houston, you have a situation now with the three, I guess, revenue sports, where you have a situation where Coach Houston is where we're believing that we can actually one day go to a New Year's Six Bowl. We have Coach Dooley where we can go to NCAA tournament, and we have Coach Godwin is sniffing right at Omaha.
Well, I would take it a little step further, too. You know, I feel really good about Kim McNeil in women's basketball.
Yes.
We just hired a new coach in women's golf and C.C. Buford. You know, all of our programs, I do think, are trending in the right direction. I think certainly the leadership of the coaches you just mentioned, all of Pirate Nation should be really encouraged about where those coaches are and where they're taking our program. I went to a men's basketball workout yesterday, and I can just tell you, we look so much better on the hoof. I don't know how many games we'll win. We do pass the look test now in men's basketball. I really am encouraged about where Joe and his staff had this program headed. We're going to surprise some people next year in Menjis, in men's basketball.
And along those lines, I know, Bubba, we were talking to Coach Dooley earlier, and it's been a busy day for us. With Coach Dooley, is there any way, this is one question that bothers me, not bothers me, but over the years at Williams Arena, Menjis Coliseum, we've always been told that the structure cannot hold a scoreboard in the middle of the, obviously, at center court. And I was telling the fellas, I have season tickets now where I'm on one of the end zones where I can see the scoreboards on the side. But a few years ago, before I had season tickets, I was sitting up. They're not nosebleeds because I think they're great seats wherever they are. But the sight lines, as far as knowing the score and all that, you couldn't see anything at the seats I was sitting at.
Well, I do love the bones of Menjis. I think it is a really good arena. There are some things we need to do to improve upon it. We are actually right now resanding the floor. We're going to completely strip it, new paint design, logos, everything. There are multiple things that I would like to do in Menjis. Obviously, from a funding standpoint, we're going to have to do that in phases. But I think it is where we live, the neighborhood we live in college athletics, we are going to have to constantly upgrade our facilities in different areas. Now, being where we are, we can't do it all in one fell swoop, but I think a project here and there, we've got to constantly improve in that footprint.
One of the things that I've been really impressed with, obviously, a lot of times because it's the most visible thing, and you see the success and how things are going athletically, but the success that our athletics programs are having in the classroom has been really impressive because not only are they putting up excellent GPAs, a lot of these GPAs are like program records. So that's something that, as a Pirate Club member, that I know is very encouraging and good to see.
Well, it is really encouraging. I'm actually checking my email because I had it in front of me today. But we are doing really well in the classroom. Departmentally, we had a 3.14 GPA. And so I know that, you know, if you're at a 3.0 or above, and I'm talking about all 19 sports, that's an impressive number. I know that football and men's basketball had record numbers this year in GPAs. It's a point of emphasis for us. You know, we need to be good in the classroom, and I think all our coaches have done a good job of making sure that is a point of emphasis.
And it really does. One of the things that drives me crazy as someone who has been a student, obviously East Carolina, I've taught school and everything, being a teacher, but when I hear the term that it's not sexy anymore, it's not accurate, it's like it's certainly out of date, out of style to hear the term student-athlete, and I say that's crazy. I think that you can have success on and off the court or field.
Well, the most important thing that can happen with our student-athletes while they're here at East Carolina is obtain a degree. I 100% believe that. I'm a first generation college student or college graduate. I know that with a degree, the quality of life and the doors and opportunities that are open for you with that can never be taken away. And so it is a point of emphasis in this athletic administration.
One question I had is I found out today, apparently you like bicycling. I know that there's so much things you guys have been working on. Have you had a chance to get out and enjoy Greenville and Pitt County and beyond?
I have. I actually, not as much as I like, but I've gotten out probably a handful of times on my bike, and I found this place. It's really south of Grimesland and Simpson. There's an area out there. It's called the Edward R. Murrah Radio of America. Are you all familiar with that area?
Yeah, I know exactly where you're talking about.
Yeah, there are a lot of radio antennas out there. I've been out there on my bike for a 20-25 mile loop ride, and I've enjoyed getting out in eastern North Carolina.
A lot of fun. Well, I know that we've got the big events coming up in the middle of August. I know before we let you go, I know we have the Talmadge Tower. That stuff is going to be coming up. I believe is that the 16th, the ribbon cutting, and the 17th will be Meet the Pirates.
Yes, we're going to do a ribbon cutting for those individuals that have invested and will be sitting in the tower in the fall, where they'll get to see that facility first, and then the next day will be Meet the Pirates. And when we do Meet the Pirates, we're going to have an opportunity where anyone from the public, they can come and take a tour of the tower. I think it is important that everybody gets to see it. It will be a venue that we will rent out to the public for parties, weddings, et cetera. And so I do think it is a community asset, and I do want everybody to have the ability to walk through it before the first football game.
And before we let you go, John, I actually was talking to Philip earlier today. I have an idea to have a sports bar somewhere near Dowdy Ficklin where we could have it open all year. And he said that at that club level, that sports bar, it's like a sports bar atmosphere with all the televisions, and maybe we can have from time to time where we can have people come in and get lunch or something.
Well, I think that'd be a great idea. I think the way the club room is set up and with that sports bar motif in there, I do think having multiple events that the athletic department sponsors, like Chamber of Commerce, Kiwanis, Rotary, business-to-business partnerships, having in that area, I think it will be a really neat venue that could enhance this entire community.
Well, we're very excited. I tell you what, it's been an honor to have you back on. Thank you so much for your I always say you're only good as the top, and I appreciate, I know we do, everybody in Pirate Nation, the buzz has been great this year. There's a lot of people talking about how they haven't been this hopeful, and some people are saying in many, many years. So I want to give you kudos from everybody in Pirate Nation. Thank you for all that you're doing, and thank you for your time on being back on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a team effort. We're going to all have to do this together. I'm fortunate and blessed that I get to lead the department. But I can't do it alone. We've got a lot of great people that work here. We've got a very passionate fan base, and I do think that is the strength of East Carolina, and couldn't be more excited for this fall. Go Pirates!
Enjoy John Gilbert there, and Kyle, I know you were working, and I was working, but we were able to – Bubba, like, is retired now. He doesn't have to work anymore.
Right.
But the two of us had to literally work, and I know you had to get back quicker than I did. But appreciate John Gilbert. I tell you what, man, the ward building is rocking. The people were excited. There's a buzz. What's funny is when you go to the ward building now, when people talk about, gosh, you're an energy suck, or people make that with that that term, you'd walk in the building before, and it was like crickets, you know. And there's something about it now. People have. You see the people walking around, they have more pep in their step. It's just a great feeling, and it's all because of John and Ryan Robinson and all the great people there. And we're going to be talking on our next episode with Philip Wood, the director of the Pirate Club, executive director, and had a chance to go to his office and sit down and a great interview with him. But Gilbert was fantastic. I really appreciate his honesty, his transparency. I think the program is, how could it be worse than the golfer? I guess it could, but it's definitely, he gets it from the pickup truck and all. So appreciate John very much. And I'm just excited for the future of this program. I think it's tremendous. I think the people are going to work very hard. And so anyway, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, John's doing a good job. Ryan's doing a good job. You know, like you said before, the vibe at Ward was so bad previously with Comper and Vinegar. I mean, anything would be an improvement over those clowns. And it's a step in the right direction. Going back to the Gilbert interview, I do have some concerns with the scheduling philosophy thing. We're going to take a couple of guaranteed games. I'm not a fan of doing that. I think once you start doing that, you open up a door of potentially, you know, let's say we do a guarantee at Clemson within South Carolina. They say, well, then why are we ever going to do a 2-for-1 or whatever with East Carolina again? You know, so I that concerns me. I was thinking you guys, y'all say, or the only team I would do that with is Notre Dame, because I think that's such a unique situation.
Yeah, it would have to be a situation-by-situation basis, right? I mean,
I wouldn't even do it with Alabama. And I know some people may be going, oh, you're crazy. But to me, if there's nobody else in the American that does that. And to me, it makes us come across like a MAC or a Sun Belt school. And if nobody else in our conference is doing it, and Mike Orasco, I'm pretty sure it doesn't like for schools to do that.
Right. Same thing with basketball. If he does it for basketball, you know he's not going for football.
Correct, yeah. And I don't think we should do it. I'm against it. I'm not the athletic director. I would recommend, and I understand we do have a bit of a deficit right now we're trying to fix financially. So I understand from that standpoint. I know we have the lowest budget in the American. But to me, it's I don't know. To me, it's almost like an easy fix for the money. It's almost like it's too easy. I just don't like it. I think I hate to use the term whoring yourself, but that's kind of what you're doing. And I don't think we should have to do that. And probably the fault of the previous administration that we're in a position where we feel like we have to do that. But I hope John reconsiders that. I think some Pirate fans disagree with that. I know there are quite a few Pirate fans that like those one-off games because they perceive it as being our only chance to play in Alabama or somebody like that. But yeah, like Bubba was saying earlier off air, you know, back when Virginia Tech was playing on some regular basis, I'd a whole lot rather play home and home with Virginia Tech.
West Virginia,
yeah. Exactly, than do a one-off with Alabama. There are even 2-for-1s. If somebody like Missouri, I'm just throwing a name out there, if Missouri said, hey, East Carolina, you do a 2-for-1, I'd a whole lot rather do a 2-for-1 with them than a one-off at LSU. And I think there are some Pirates that would disagree with that, but I think if you really think about it, once you open that gate and you start doing it on a regular basis, when I say regular basis, one every couple of years, I think you're going to have people that are going to use it against you when you're trying to do a home-and-home or a 2-for-1. You know, you can even see where Carolina or NC State could use it against us. Well, you know, if you're going to do a one-off at this Power 5 school, we're a Power 5 school also, why should we go to your place?
I think it's going to be absolutely crucial for us. I think what we need to do, so what it seems like what you're saying, Kyle, the best thing to do is to focus on kind of what we're doing. Don't worry about the power, those premium games, whatever you want to call it. I call them one-offs. But for me personally, what I'd like to see is continue on the road we're doing and build the program up so that if you are a top 25 program, which we are, that's where, to me, an East Carolina team that's 8-4, 9-3 is kind of like the bottom of the top 25, like cracking the top 25. That's the, to me, where we should be every single year. And
I mean, really, if we got a good product on the field and we're stringing together six, even if it's just 6 to 8 wins a year, we're going to have between 40,000 and 50,000 people in there every home game. We're going to be making money. Again, I think there is some ground to be made up. We do have the smallest budget in the American, and I think probably John probably looks and sees those one-off games as a chance to make a quick $1 million, $1.5 million without very much effort. And in the cases where it's going to be replacing a road game with Virginia Tech, he probably is saying, you know, no harm, no foul kind of deal where we need a road game anyway.
It has to be a special – yeah, I agree with you. It has to be, to me, where it comes down to, it has to be a case-by-case basis. It can't be a strategy because if you do that, like you were saying, Kyle, you really diminish your who you are, and it's kind of like you sell yourself to the to the devil, so to speak. And I'm not anti those schools. I'm not anti playing those schools. I think it's just –
They want to do a 2-for-1, if, you know. Right. Yeah. It's not going to happen. LSU or Alabama – are not going to do that. They would play, you know, Eastern Michigan just as soon as East Carolina. They look at us the same, and we're not right. The same, and we don't need to present ourselves as the same.
Right, and we need to separate, like the commissioner's doing a great job being the leader that he is. We need to separate ourselves from the group of five, but if you have a whole bunch of group of five schools that are doing it and we do it, then we're really group of five. I know we are, but I'm just saying that we've got to present ourselves you got to present yourself as a winner before you are a winner. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to put yourself out there that we are the best before you are. You have to believe in yourself, in other words.
Well, I can tell you this. UCF, Cincinnati, yes. Boise State, they're not going to do it.
Right, so BYU.
Neither should we. So.
Right. There's certain teams, and they are right there on the cusp, if you will, bubble teams that could be picked apart, you know, cherry-picked out of the American or any of the other group of five, maybe some of the group of five conferences, but certainly the American will be the first one. And so you have to make sure that you're, like you're saying, and with East Carolina, I believe that when you have Mike Houston, you give him 3, 4, 5 years of recruiting, you're going to start seeing us back in the top 25 again, knocking at the door. We'll have one of those seasons where maybe or even a top 15 team, even a chance at a New Year's Six Bowl is something that I think is very attainable the next few years. So I'm not saying this year. I'm not smoking crack. That would be. Can you imagine that going 3-9, 3-9, New Year's Six Bowl?
I'd be gone in 1 year.
Oh my God!
Oh.
I'm not planning on that. So for everybody in Pirate Nation, don't worry. I'm okay. I took my medication today, so I'm good.
And Kyle, a minute ago, you mentioned Missouri. I know in the last several years, Missouri's gone on the road, and then also Oklahoma State has gone on the road to Sun Belt, and then MAC foes. So, if they're going to go there and play, then why shouldn't they come to Greenville or somebody like that?
Correct. Yeah. You know, I wish I'd had more time to speak specifically on the subject with John. I'm not going to throw John under the bus saying he's a horrible AD because he talked about doing this. I'm just saying I'd really like to know his full logic behind it. I think I know his logic behind it, and I think it's too short-sighted. I think it's too much of a quick fix to bring revenue into the program, and I don't think it's something we need to do. I don't think it's a path we need to go down.
But, guys, in that interview toward the tail end, John Gilbert, he brought up some of the recent hires in terms of head coaches like C.C. Buford and then also Kim McNeil with women's basketball. But we had a recent hire today, it was announced today anyway, by head coach Cliff Godwin, director of baseball operations, Pete Buscano, who had been with Coach Godwin since he arrived in Greenville. He had ties with him going back to his days at UCF. He and his wife are moving up to Madison, Wisconsin, and he'll be pursuing other things. Pete Buscano, after doing a tremendous job, he is going to be replaced by Blake Hardegree. He had been down at Samford, and Samford's had very strong baseball. He had just spent this this 1 year as the director of player development and the director of ops there at Samford. Welcome to Blake. Look forward to having you in Greenville. And a little bit about him: he's originally from Amarillo, Texas, and then he played. He was a 4-year player at the Division II level out at Northwest Missouri State. And he was a catcher and a 2-year captain for Northwest Missouri State. And then he got into the coaching ranks. I want to say it was at Iowa Lakes Community College. And after a year or a few there, he had moved on to Samford.
Now, is there any truth to the rumor that the only reason he got the job is because he turned it down?
I cannot confirm nor deny that.
Okay.
But yes, in addition to that, while we're on the topic of baseball, congratulations to Jake Agnos.
Yes.
Jake Agnos was the male scholar athlete of the year in the American Athletic Conference. So that's all 18, 19, however many sports in the American. Jake Agnos was the male scholar athlete of the year with something like a 3.959 or something crazy GPA.
Congratulations to Jake. That's something to be proud of.
Sounds fantastic because, with Jake. And then how about Bryant Packard? I thought that was fantastic with his 359 batting average, the highest ever. It's a new record for the American for conference record.
Yep, I saw that as well. And like you said, all-time leader in batting average, tremendous career that Pack had in the purple and gold.
Yeah, I saw something. Did he get called up, or is he going to be called
up?
And
he was actually promoted. I think he'd been in low A ball with the Connecticut Tigers, and he was promoted to high A ball over in Western Michigan, I believe it was. I want to say it was the Western Michigan Whitecaps or something like that. But because I saw Corey Glore tweeting about it, and he was telling Pack as far as the restaurant that he had to try or something.
Gotcha. Yeah,
good stuff there. Baseball is baseball is going to be very exciting. Maybe in the next month or two we can have on Corey Glore back on, because I know we've got fall ball coming up, and they'll have a couple. I think we have the return games to Virginia, Bubba.
Yep. According to what Coach Godwin was saying last year, in the fall, UVA came down, and then we also had a game with Pitt Community College, where Tommy Eason brought the boys over. So this year, unless something's changed, we'll be going up to Charlottesville, and I think we'll probably play Pitt again. It seems like I remember hearing that as well, but I'm not 100% on that.
Did I make this up, or can you count those games now towards your schedule? Or they don't count against your schedule?
You can play two and not have them count against your schedule. I think you can play more than that, but if you do, it counts against your 56 that you can play in the spring.
But the wins and loss records don't count,
right,
correct?
Right.
Which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
In the,
if you're going to make the games count, if the NCAA is going to make the games count, then count the damn record.
In the past, prior to that rule getting passed before last fall, it seems like it was just if you played any game in the fall against somebody where it wasn't an interest squad, then it counted against your 56. So that was good to see that you could play two games and not have it count against your 56 in the spring.
Yeah, because for years, if I remember correctly, Rice used to always play games in the fall, and it counted against their 56, and there were some people that speculated that maybe that was part of their success. They played competition in the fall. But I've always thought that was stupid, that if they count towards the amount of games you can play, then the game should be counted.
Yeah. And not to get off on a tangent, but I'm talking about the number of games in college baseball. I'm trying to remember what year that changed. It's been several years ago now, way back. But there used to not be a limit at all. So you had teams like Hawaii and teams in Florida and California. If they wanted to, they could play 75 ball games.
Yeah, you know, I remember that before that was changed. Because you would have, they changed it some time ago, they went to a universal start date, Bubba. Because I can remember when I really started following college baseball hard in the early 2000s, you'd have some teams that started playing like Hawaii, as you mentioned, in January. They would start playing in January, and there wasn't a universal start date. So have some games. By the time East Carolina started around Valentine's Day, you'd have some teams that already played three weekend series.
Yeah. I'm so glad we had a motorcycle earlier, then we had a loud truck just then. So glad we can bring you the sounds of Rowan County on a...
I was actually John Gilbert.
Yeah.
All right. So, Dave, you still there?
Yeah, I had it on mute. I didn't hear what you... What did you say?
Nothing important.
Okay. Yeah, so you guys... I got to ask you this, guys, before we go. We got some promotional stuff to talk about, too. But one thing that's been on my mind off topic is, do you guys binge watch television?
Not a lot. I've been meaning to get on YouTube and watch season 2 of Cobra Kai.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I need to.
I love season 1. I haven't watched season 2 yet, but that's something I need to do. Stranger Things, I have not seen the first 2 seasons.
That's
definitely is the greatest show in the world.
That's the reason why I brought that up to you guys, is that I know our good buddy Brandon Simmons put up on Facebook. All these people on Facebook I'm seeing on social media, you know, about Stranger Things, and but it's coming out at midnight or 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever, and I was like, I haven't even... There's so much great television as far as TV shows on now on streaming. It's very difficult to...
Well, you know, what's so crazy is everybody seems so excited about Stranger Things 3. I don't remember season 1 and 2 being that popular. I guess it's one of those things maybe that, kind of like The Walking Dead, the first 2 seasons were popular, but they weren't to the point where it was just impermeated pop culture until season 3. And I guess it may be the same thing. The people have just caught up with it from hearing friends talk about it, and now everybody has watched it on Netflix, evidently, except us three, season 22. And so now that season 3 is out, everybody's excited. But I haven't watched Stranger Things. It does seem interesting, so it's not something that I scoff at. It's just something that I haven't watched. I think it's interesting. Coke has released a new Coke. To Stranger Things 3, because it's based in the 80s, and I guess
it is
where season 3 starts. It's going to be when New Coke came out, so they're releasing New Coke, re-releasing New Coke. It was first just released online. Now it's available in certain stores. I mean, you can get it at Target. I don't remember what New Coke tastes like, so I'm anxious to go to Target and get one and try it.
Came out in 1986, I believe.
Yeah, I remember having it as a kid, but I cannot remember what it tastes like. So I'm anxious to see if I like it or not.
What's funny is how funny will it be if people actually like the... It was such a bum the first time, but maybe it'll be the second time as a charm.
Well, the problem was, Dave, when they came out with New Coke, initially they did away with old Coca-Cola.
That's why the plastic was
added. You know, they was the stupidest decision ever. And they coexisted for a while. It was New Coca-Cola Classic, and then they changed it to Coke 2. Coca-Cola Classic and Coke 2. And
then they eventually got smart.
It was available in some markets for like the mid-90s. I can't remember what it was. I remember people saying it was similar, more of a similar taste to Pepsi.
Yeah, I think the one thing that came to mind when you asked that, it seems like if my memory serves, or if I'm, they, it was like in the 80s, the Cola Wars, and it seemed like that very thing that it was sweeter. That's what
well,
my memory is.
In the Cola, during the Cola Wars, Pepsi was winning, and what really turned the tide for Coke, a lot of people think that the new Coke, and this is totally off subject what we're supposed to be talking about.
We'll get back. Yeah, we'll get back.
A lot of people think that there are people that have the conspiracy theories that they, you know, did that to try to make people miss Coca-Cola Classic and to bring it back. And, you know, nobody's smart enough to know that's going to happen.
But it was
great that, in my mind, looking back as a kid, what I really think turned the Cola Wars to Coke's favor was when they got all the fast food contracts.
Yes.
When they got all the fast food contracts, except
in the late 80s, I want to say.
Yeah, late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. Taco Bell, KFC, which I believe were all owned by Pepsi, actually.
They were owned by, yeah. That's why their family, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe that's why Pepsi bought them, so they would have a presence in the past. I remember, you know, McDonald's, Wendy's, you know,
something like that. I remember Burger King was Pepsi, and I remember Burger King switched to Coke. And
that, to me, was the turning point where Coke took over and was number one again over Pepsi.
Yes, that's the Cola Wars for you. The Cola Wars objective for you, folks. So.
Yes, Bubba, did you enjoy that?
Are you awake, Bubba? He's put on mute.
I'm not being a part of it.
But I heard from Dana today, guys. She called me, and we're going to be – she's coming on the podcast. We'll have her on in the next few days. She's going to be taking – giving all the information and obviously taking your orders. It's actually taking your deposits for next year for our cruise, the Sports Objective Pirate Cruise, July the 16th to the 20th.
And when can we start – when can we start doing this, Dave? Can we – contact her now or next week or what?
We can actually do it right now.
Do you have her number?
Yes. Give me a second and I'll tell you.
Okay.
I've got it right here. Hold on.
All right. Dave is getting her number right now, people.
It's 919-830-4161. 919-830-4161. Her name is Dana Shrink. Dana's Global Travel is her company. And she will look out for you and go ahead, and she will work with you however you need to set it up. Some people are...
Yeah, and when you contact her, tell her you want to, I guess, identify it as a Sports Objective cruise next July.
Yes, and so she'll take care of you. And the thing I like about Dana is the fact that a lot of the online people are fine. There's nothing wrong with them, but they'll tell you something's $300, and you get excited it's $300 a person, and all of a sudden it becomes $700. The great thing about Dana, she goes ahead and gives you a set price. You'll know up front how much you have to pay. I don't like the surprises of thinking you're
going to pay. And there are things that aren't included in that price. Right. The prices that you know we were quoted, that's, you have a price you can pay, and then there's a price that will include your gratuity and insurance.
Correct.
But there are some things that aren't included, like drink passes. If you want to drink alcohol or soda, tea, lemonade, water, I guess coffee.
Internet.
Is included. There are some restaurants on the ship that are included. Some are not, which I did not know. I thought all food was included, but
they've added that. It didn't used to be that way, but they've added restaurants as another revenue stream. And there's, of course, the spa you can pay extra. There's excursions when we're going to do the four-day cruise, so we'll be out of Charleston to the Bahamas, a very easy drive for no matter where you are. And I love Charleston, so a chance for you to go the night before and spend the night and come over to the port. But we're going to have a great time. In fact, Nassau will be day three, and you'll have there's all kinds of – you don't even have to get off the boat if you don't want to. There's so many great activities on the boat. But if you want to get off and spend some time in Nassau in the Bahamas, you can do that too. Excursions are extra, but the good news is you can get off the boat and you're not too far away where you can walk around Nassau and a lot of great shopping. So all kinds of great things to do. And again, it's very affordable. Dana has put together, we have a block of rooms already for, there's interior rooms. There's ocean view rooms. That's what probably most people will get. And there's also some balcony rooms. And the balcony are fantastic because the room's a little bit bigger, and, of course, you have the balcony that you can sit out and spend time on the ocean, so to speak. So We'll have a social, as we talked about, and we're going to record a podcast on the ship. And only the people there will be able initially to hear it. Of course, we'll release it after the when we get back.
Yeah, and so I've gotten good response, Dave. I know my sister says she's coming. One of her friends is very interested, and she wants the information. I've posted another friend who wants to come, but don't know if they have the money. So
yeah,
it's you know,
the great thing about it. And the great thing about it, folks, we're just getting started. We'll have up until about 2 months before we go on the ship that we'll find out about the in other words, you'll have plenty of time to pay about 10 months from the time of the cruise. So sometime in, I would assume, May that you'll have to. So there's some people that, Kyle, what they do is they literally take tax money. And they make little payments here and there and then take most of the bulk. I've done that. There's times when maybe you have a little bit more money all throughout the year and you can kind of even things out. There's all kinds of way to pay for it. As long as you have it paid about 2 months before, prior to the ship sailing, the cruise, then you're good to go. So we're going to have a lot of fun there. How about starting on Friday? We have the 50 for 50, 50 Pirates, 50 Days. Bubba's been working really hard behind the scenes. I want to give him a shout-out. There, and we have the Captain Shane Carden on Friday, guys, so that's going to be a lot of fun. Working on trying to get things ready, hopefully next Friday for Friday morning football. We'll see about that. We may have to push it back a week, but we're hoping that we can get things on the 19th. If we can, we will do everything we can to make that possible, but everything's a good go for Giddy Up Coffee in Williamson. They're very excited about it. It says Free Shot Friday. So they have two locations in Washington and Williamston. We'll be at the Williamston location, the old KFC. We've got that going on. And we're trying to work out the stuff for the Sports Objective Watch Party. So six episodes we'll be working on that. So we got lots of a busy summer. A lot of people think one of the guests that we talked to today, he asked me, he said, I guess you don't have a lot going on now, the summertime. I said, are you kidding me? We got more. It seems like more now than we've ever had. So. Kyle, I guess Bubba, has he fallen asleep?
No, yeah. I'm here.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Oh, Bubba's back. He just let him turn the Polar War Objective.
Yeah, but in addition to everything you said, obviously this show was excellent with John Gilbert, but the guests from ECU will continue over the next few podcasts. We'll talk to Philip Wood, the executive director of the ECU Pirate Club, and we will also catch up with head men's basketball coach Joe Dooley. And then talk about the roster overhaul there and where things stand going into the summer, throughout the summer and into the fall, in that 1920 season. And then also we'll catch up with Pirate Steve Wetzel. And Pirate Steve is the pirate that, of course, leads us through the Purple Haze, and he's been doing that now since 2009. So he's someone that will be an excellent guest, and we look forward to talking to him about the adrenaline rush that he gets on game days leading the Pirates through the tunnel.
Yeah, a lot of ladies, that'll help the listenership as far as our female listeners. We do have female listeners, and we appreciate them very much, but the number of pirate lady pirate listeners will go way, and non-pirate lady listeners will go way up when Pirate Steve is on with us.
And also, as far as Steve goes, speaking of the entrance, it will be interesting to see exactly what it's like this year, because we're not going to come through the Murphy Center as we have since the Murphy Center was built and opened back in 2002. So that will be very interesting to, it's going to be more like the old days, prior to the Murphy Center being built. But obviously it's going to be, hopefully a much better entrance, and a much more interesting entrance, I should say, in terms of, it'll be interesting to see if we go with the tunnel or exactly what it is.
I think it's going to be more, I think when we were talking about Ryan Robinson, we're looking at, are they going to come in the Boneyard side?
No, they're not
doing that.
Down by the pirate statue.
Yeah, that's what we were hoping. They were going to come in that area, but it's going to be like they used to come in over there on that, southeast corner. No, you're trying to get my geography right. It, It's to the left of where they come in now.
It'd be the southwest corner, I guess.
Southwest, yeah.
Yeah, southwest corner, okay.
Yeah, so we're going to have that's going to be interesting to see just the fact that I think people are going to be – it doesn't matter where they come in. I think the people are going to be so jacked up that we have Mike Houston, the very first home game, Town Bank Tower.
Oh, I think you're wrong. I think people will care. There will be some people that will complain to no end that they're not coming through the Murphy Center anymore. There'll be other people that'll think it's the greatest thing ever that they're coming in like
well,
they used to,
yeah.
But Logan Lewis will be here. So,
well, the thing is, I was like you guys, because not to get off on a tangent, because we need to wrap this thing up. But you know, in my opinion, and in a lot of folks' opinions, that whole Murphy Center end zone project wasn't handled well, and we should have had seats down there to begin with, where we would have had a tunnel like we have down in the Boneyard Inn. Where that would have provided for more natural entrance, but we don't have that, so we got to make the best of what we have.
Hammer it.
Hey guys, had a great podcast. Hey, thank you, John Gilbert. Appreciate you, sir, very much for coming on. He's so accessible and definitely transparent. Appreciate him very much. And guys, I hope you have a great evening. And whenever you're listening, hope you definitely will come back with us. We're going to have more fun. I promise. Lots of great stuff. Stay with us. You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.